Thank you, Lynn. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this gathering this morning. I'd like to introduce here ourselves and everyone to each other and just take a moment so our music maestro, Lynn, can play our opening song. Our reader today will be our very own Hank Hamilton, who also leads the Joe Goldsmith Group, among other things. And, of course, Barb Dearwater, our admin. So let's just take a moment, say hi, and let Lynn play our welcoming song.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thank you, Ms. Lynn. So just a mic check, make sure everyone can hear me, and we'll go on to our statement of purpose. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self, within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And I chose the third core value today to focus on. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Turn it back over to Lynn for our... I don't know if we have an opening song now. I think that's a different point. Maybe I need to erase that from my service here. I don't think that's correct. I just did the opening song. I'll move directly into announcements. We actually have a few new audio categories in our website that everyone will know about, so we can announce those here. Under inspiration, there's featured talk audios, which now are divided into like guest miniseries audios, satsang audios, and other featured talks. So check those out. Those are going to be available. So the most recent miniseries that's been going on will be available there. And under inspiration, meditation audios, Like a lot of people have been asking for Regina and Karen's meditation audios. Those are going to be available under devotional meditation audios. And there's also a section called ACIM meditation audios too. Now, all of the groups, both the time and info of the group and then the archived sort of audios of all the groups. And there is seven groups now. The 12-step discussion, the Course in Miracles, the Course of Love, which I know is ran by Carrie Christensen, Joel Goldsmith, co-hosted by our very own Hank Hamilton, who will be reading today. The Movie Watchers discussion group, hosted by Jacqueline, and NTI, and then the Sufi Contemplation, by Regina. And I think the 12-step is led by Nancy and Stefan. And I think I may have missed mentioning a few leaders, but I'll just include them in spirit. But those are all the different groups. Now, there's seven, and there could be more, too. So if you do have an idea for a group, submit it to the board, and we will take it into consideration. So the other announcement for today is remind everyone, and I wanted to remind everyone that the second section of the Martha Creeks miniseries, which is tonight at 9, is going to be happening. Yeah, I did mention Nancy and Stefan for the 12-step group, yeah. Okay, so I guess Hank helps Vicky with the Joe Goldsmith group, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. Teddy does lead the ACN study group, right. Yep. Okay, so Hank is a different Joe Goldsmith group. Okay. Thanks for letting me know that. So, Martha Creek, the wonderful teacher that we have now is the teacher for our mini-series that we currently have, is going to be teaching the work that is called The Work by Byron Katie, and she is a certified teacher. And this is all within the realm of, you know, looking at self rather than trying to change other people, which is, I think, real connected to where we try to hide. We try to hide behind our blame of other people when we react instead of examining the thoughts that come up, which is a real big key. So let's take a moment and go inside. We're going to bring in our invocation prayer here this morning. I give my acknowledgement, dear God, that you are the presence in which I live, and every part of myself is within God. I know that my heart will be released in spirit through grace unless I want to block love and thus imprison myself. In the name of my freedom, I choose your release in my heart and in the sight of all brothers, because I recognize that we will only be released together, united as one. In this spirit, I choose to see me being within you and all within you, too. I thus see no separation between God and me, and in whom all I see. In this I know I am healed. Amen. Okay, we will move on to our reading now. And we have a recent ordained minister, Hank Hamilton, who will be joining us this morning to give us the reading. And I was inspired to draw from topic number 30 from the Sufi Book of Life. And it is Al-Latif, Subtle Mystery. And I'll introduce just the first section, Hank, and then you can take the mic and read the full page of it. When you are guided to this pathway, take the opportunity to contact the part of your being that reflects and can reflect upon mystery and subtlety. Turning the mic over to you, Hank.
I'm not sure. Okay, can you hear me? Okay, I got distracted there when you started reading, Jay, so I'm not exactly sure what you read. So I'm going to start at the top, unless you tell me different, and read from there. Okay? All good. All right. When you are Al-Latif, when you are guided to this pathway, take the opportunity to contact the part of your being that reflects and can reflect upon mystery and subtlety. In exploring our inner self through the pathways of the heart, we may be tempted to believe that we could one day understand everything. We could explain all miracles if only we could train our senses and feelings to be subtle enough, for instance, by exploring the previous pathways of Hakam and Adal. This pathway and the next, which are often linked, tell us that whatever sensitivity we may develop through our bodies, nervous systems, and senses, whatever self-control we may master, divine mystery will remain. The following Quranic meditation, Surah 22.63, expresses this. My beloved, please ask everyone to notice how the one being sends rain from the sky, and immediately the fields green. The one sight and sense cannot be fathomed. So subtle, nurturing, mysterious, bringing the seed self of all beings to fruition. Mystery remains an active force in the universe, like a wild card in the game of existence. As the saying goes, this could be good news or bad news, depending upon how your life is going at the moment. All other things being equal, the Sufi usually opts for mystery. As Rumi says, be empty of what you think you know. That's why Muhammad said, fools will take up most of paradise. Your clever mind just whips up a dust storm of pride. Allow yourself to be fooled, and peace clowns its way into your heart. If your head would shatter in wonder at what reality really is, reason's tyranny would end, and every hair on your head would become an oracle. Perhaps life is calling you right now to contemplate subtlety and mystery and to stand in awe of the one reality of life. Don't try to explain things. Just add wonder and gratitude. When we begin to see with the eyes of Latif, everything around us seems to have its own uniquely beautiful secret place with inside. And Allah.
Yeah, I just complete that last little sentence there. It says, beautiful secret place inside, and Allah protects Allah's secret in us all. That was beautiful reading. Thank you. Thank you, Hank. So let's just take a moment and contemplate Al-Latif and allow ourselves to sink into that subtlety and mystery and wonder and gratitude. And let's just close our eyes and take in a deep breath real quick. And just allow ourselves to go inside just for a moment. Just go inside. And take in a deep breath. And exhale. And open your eyes again. You know, when I was going through, and we were all going through the MPP program, going through the Sufi course, this particular pathway was assigned as part of the curriculum. So I did a lot of contemplation with Al-Latif before. When I was in the grocery store yesterday, contemplating what the topic of the gathering should be, and the inspiration hit me for the title of the gathering, Why Hide When You Can Go Inside, I immediately went to the Sufi Book of Life and found this pathway, and I think it fits perfectly. Now, there's many times that we all experience resistance. Some experience it as a general resistance to meditation. Some experience it as a general resistance to contemplation. You know, there was a number of ministers, as they were giving their first homily, their 2 or 3 minute first homily during the graduation ceremony out in Colorado just the other weekend, that did describe an initial resistance to contemplation. And this is somewhat natural because the false self, the house that we've constructed in which we seem to live, is the place where we do hide and have found our seeming comfort and our home. Our mirage, our false beliefs, our construct of thinking. And contemplation and meditation both gently move us past, as the poem says, our tyranny of reason. It tells us what we can and can't do, and how we should and shouldn't think by the way of reason. Sometimes when we go inside and we contemplate the subtle mystery and we allow that being to flow through us, the choices we make can sometimes seem counterintuitive to what the tyranny of reason and the logic of our mind seems to want to accept. But the truth is that every thought we have has to be brought to the light. Even the prideful ones, the destructive ones, the ones we judge as negative or perverted or hateful, or whatever it is that you judge it to be, it must be brought to the light. We cannot hide from our thoughts, because we are not guilty, see. And the Course in Miracles teaches, of course, that this whole place was created to hide from guilt. Oh, you feel guilty? Well, come on here, let me show you a place you can hide in this little illusion where we don't have to be accountable. We can just get away from all that judgment, which fortunately doesn't really exist. And that's really the whole key as to why we hide in the first place, why we resist contemplation, why we resist meditation, because we're afraid of facing the thoughts that are in there, see? We're afraid of facing the thinking. And by encouraging that willingness, by even praying sometimes for that willingness, if we don't feel we have it, because there's always times when resistance is going to come up. If you don't have a daily practice, it's important to adopt one. You know, as Regina has often taught, that formal daily practice, that formal time, can be very critical in our spiritual growth, in our spiritual path. And as we develop the habit of going inside more and more, we realize that there is nothing to fear. And some of the last sermon I gave, we went over a lot of different, kind of back to the basics practices. You know, and listening to the inner guidance is one of them. You know, remember that the Divine Spirit knows our mind completely. And Holy Spirit can guide us through the maze of our own resistance with great wisdom if we would listen to it. You know, we can't hide our thoughts from the work that we're doing, the spiritual work, like NTI Matthew 13 talks about. You know, all these thoughts from the corners of our minds have to come to the light. And we have to say, this thought, I will give up. This thought is not of the light. I'm going to take it out of the hiding, out of the shadows. Because a lot of the ways in which we hide are typical to our own ego patterns, right? Again, all because we don't want to face. We don't want to face the feeling of guilt that's associated with the thought that we're trying to avoid. And if we can face it and accept it, and as the Course says, forgive, but just accept and allow, we won't feel the same urge to go to the habitual covering. Maybe there is a physical substances you like to partake of to help you hide, or intellectual thoughts or books you like to read to immerse yourself into more thinking to hide, or maybe distract yourself with outer distractions to hide. Now, all of these things can be used for awakening too. We can do any activity with the presence of mind and the guidance of spirit for awakening. We can read any book for awakening. Or we can use it to hide, one of the two. And Jesus drank wine. You don't have to be addicted to alcohol to drink wine. Everything can be either a hammer or a key to open a door. And so that desire in us to continue to run and hide will be there until we really let go of that thought that we're bad, of course, the central thought of I am bad because I have these thoughts, which all comes back to the I am bad thought many times, I guess in all cases, comes back to that. I am unworthy. I have failed. I have sinned. You know, in this temporal world that we find ourselves in, the illusionary temporal world, we can be lost in. And the only way, like a compass pointing north to our true home, is to find the light. And this light comes from going within. You know, the Buddhists call it the light of self. The light of Christ in Christian terms. Many times when I meditate or go inside, I do see a light as well. You know, and when you make your purpose not for gain in the world, but for allowing yourself to give up the world, this light can be revealed through you and through all of us. And we have to face our fears as we go in to this subtle mystery that Al-Latif invites us into. But we're not alone when we face our fears. Fears of being hurt, fears of being alone, fears of being with something or someone or in a situation you dread. All of these things in this temporal world we live in are temporary. So we can enjoy all of the things that are with us for the time they're with us and delight in their passage as much a part of life as everything else, if we choose to. Because the shadow of fear as we face it is only temporary for just a moment before we pass through it. The shadow of fear is only temporary. And then as the light expands, the shadow is forgotten about. And so all the fears we keep from God are the ways in which we hide. And there is no real need for fear of God, fear of judgment, fear of punishment, because we've not committed any horrible offense. Thank goodness it's not capable or even possible to offend God at all. We can't do anything to screw up. All we can do is simply waste time and simply have an experience of suffering. You know, one of the keys to, for me, has been a shift that's occurred lately with me is kind of a dearness and affection for people has come up in me that's seems to be applied to any random person to a greater degree than I can recall in the past, where there's just a greater heart opening and dearness and affection and love that I'm having for people I see, people I meet, just like almost anybody, it seems like. And I know that the more of that light we let out, the more love we can have for every single person we encounter. You know, the situations we encounter we have to actually come to learn to accept. Like Matthew 26 talks about this too in NTI. Surrender the situation and use this willingness to go inside with that surrender. Because when I fight the situation or I try to like hide from it, you know, I'm denying that. Again, it's fear. You're running from fear at that moment. And you're protecting your beliefs in separation in that way. You know, lay the self aside. Lay the self aside. You know, Jesus was not defensive when false accusations were brought. There was just silence. So every time your own mind wants to judge you and falsely accuse you of doing a wrong for having a thought, just simply sit in silence like Jesus did and allow it to pass because your own engagement with defensiveness will only entrench further the blame and the feelings of guilt that are associated with it. So when that blame comes up, and when that false accusation gets leveled, just remain in the subtle mystery and let it pass by. And it just completely fades. You know, we hide from the things that we think are going to hurt us, right? We hide from things we're afraid we're going to face because we're going to face judgment. And we don't want to deal with it. We hide from what we think is pain. And that's the greatest trick of all. We create more pain in hiding from pain, which to me is definitely doesn't make any sense, but the mind will tell us that it does. And the truth is that we cannot hide. There is no real hiding that can occur. It's like we're all inside of a glass box, and if you choose to put your hands over your eyes, everyone who has their eyes open can still see you. Anyone standing outside the glass box can still see you there. There is no real thing as hiding. Because the universe we make in our mind of illusions is not the universe of truth. It's the universe of our own perceptions and beliefs. You know, one of the big things in our world right now is politics. And I live in Chicago. And there was an event that occurred just the other day where several thousand students from UIC and other universities all showed up at the Trump convention at the UIC Pavilion. And part of that was because many of the people here in Chicago are come from so many different diverse cultural backgrounds. A lot of them are sons and daughters of immigrants. And Trump has a very controversial immigrant policy, you know, regarding putting up a wall on the Mexican border, deporting illegal immigrants, etc. Kind of an anti-immigration, what could be perceived as an anti-immigration stance. So he wants to have a rally in a university at a stadium where most of the people are immigrants or sons and daughters of immigrants. So really not much of a shock there. I mean, if you want to talk about false beliefs, that was going to happen. So, you know, this Trump has caused a lot of reactions in different ways. But these are all really great places for us to practice, right? I was talking with Regina the other day, and she was chatting, actually. You know, and there was an interesting point made about how, you know, hate can't cure hate, right? If I want to try to say that the Islamic religion people hate us, then, you know, I can't hate the person that says that they hate us. You know, the truth is that different people have different false beliefs. I'm sure some have hate, I'm sure many have love. It depends on what's going on within that individual. But what I decide, I can't decide and know what another person is doing. As soon as I think I decide and know what another person's doing on a mass scale like that, that's just a judgment or an excuse so I can once again hide and not look at myself and my own judgments. Because anytime I have a judgment about a person or like who I think of as a group, right, a group of people, based on what I see in the media, which is very biased and manipulated form of showing us things. It's kind of a poor example, but it's great for bringing up judgments, because that's all they want to do is inflame judgments to get the ratings or whatever it is. Great places for us to look, right? When we see these things, if we get caught into the trap, it's very conscious. They're trying to create, stir up people, right? Put the most controversial statements on the media, etc. And we feel something rile up within us. This is a great place to look at what our judgment is. It's a great place to look what our judgment is. And bring it to the light. That doesn't mean you become in agreement with the person you just reacted to. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about willingness to look at what comes up. Because if you do identify as being a Democrat or Republican or an independent or whatever, that's most likely not going to change. Unless, of course, you want to give up all thoughts altogether regarding politics, which, I guess we all have to give up all of our false thinking ultimately. it's only that feeling of love and that oneness of that mystery that's awake and aware behind our mind at all times that could ever guide us to truly wise action. As I have and as many have shared, when you do go into that subtlety, into that mystery, you discover that presence that's always there behind the mind. Awareness watching awareness. There's a om. There's a oneness presence that's just simply there. And it's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. And that is what can guide us from the darkness to the light. Because in the midst of a storm, who are people drawn to? And where are you drawn to? You're drawn to a safe haven. It's always fear that hides us from the truth. Always. And in the face of love, there is no fear. We all are actually on the same side. All of humanity is on the same side. We're all in that one tree, the trunk of the tree at the very bottom, but we're all one, appearing as many. So we may have different beliefs and thoughts, etc., but there's no need to break from your feeling of love and your feeling of connection, because it's all just play, right? In a dream, it's all just play. As soon as we break from that love, from that place of peace, as soon as we break from that, we have forgotten that it's an illusion, and we've taken it seriously, right? And we've gone into that hiding mode, and we've lost the awareness of the mystery. So when we stand in peace, stand silent, stand willing, and flow with where you're being guided, and again, being willingness to allow any of the fear that comes up. You can't be afraid that you're afraid. You can't be afraid to go into fear. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. I have to face it. It's not going to kill me. In fact, walking through my fear will give me life, not death. It's this loop of this unworthiness and guilt, and then the doubt comes in, and it's that endless loop that hides that truth from you when you get into that, right? Number Gina writes, fear is an energy in the body. I can watch it and be safe. Yep. Fear in its raw form, yes. And you experience the fear. And there can be, you can even be feeling the fear. Or the anger. Or any other aberrant emotion. But if you have some degree of training with your mind, you can also feel behind that, and this is what I experienced, behind that there's something else. Behind whatever energy you're feeling in the body, there's an om behind it, right? That you're 51% identified with, so that the other 49% can let that pass by and not try to protect myself from the fear. Just like Jesus didn't try to defend himself from a false attack. Because in doing so, you give it energy, right? So as I move inside, as I develop this habit, I realize that I cannot commit a crime. That even as a spiritual person, supposedly, experiencing fear is a natural part of the process of the purification of the letting go. In that this protection feeling to avoid it is a fear of the fear. It's being afraid of looking at fear. It's a fear of judgment. Some fears are so intense that we think they're going to kill us, right? Especially the things related to the past that we're afraid of, traumatic experiences. You know, there's a lot of teachings about how the past cannot hurt us, do not fear the past. But if we've suppressed something that has occurred that's been very painful or sudden or traumatic or very, very difficult, the mind will try to shut it off so that it will function. Because there's a fear that there would be like a psychotic break if you would allow it to occur, to the memory to come back. And the truth is that if we face really, really deep, intense pain, those can actually present the greatest opportunities for us to completely allow to be dissolved the false self. You know, when you look at some of the greatest spiritual teachers we have in our time, some of the most difficult, depressing, painful moments of their life where they hit rock bottom is where they seem to let go of the false self to the greatest degree. Because they were not afraid to look. They were not trying to hide. See? They were willing to go there. Into the muck and through with Divine Spirit holding their hand through the process. No hiding, right? Through the front door. Through the front door. No sugarcoating. No covering up. No slip sliding around. No manipulation. No avoiding. Through the front door. So all of our spiritual paths to return to the full awareness of our home, to wake up to self, to truly be in the full awareness of that peace and that presence that is undisturbable, requires us to have as our ally the subtle mystery and have as our ally light and a practice and a discipline. So let's take that in mind and be with that and allow that subtle mystery to come up and affirm that we will not be afraid of any fear and we'd be willing to be guided by the hand of Spirit into our truth inside. All right. Let's go ahead and now take this time to go into a little bit of a meditation. If you feel guided to do so, Barb will provide a link, and you can also donate to Awakening Together. We do receive and appreciate the support. That's how Awakening Together functions. I'll turn the mic over to you, Lynn, to play our song during our meditation time.
So that I can feel safe again. I may come to a point where I feel safe again. manipulate the world. I didn't want to change anything. I didn't want to escape or avoid anything. I wanted to, as you talked about, move through it and get to the light or the joy on the other side and have it truly, truly be healed. And because these emotions were so strong when they were coming up, and because the stories seemed so real, right? The mind knows how to pick a story that seems very real to you, very important to you. Pete Sogum used to say that the ego always knows the weakest spot in your armor, right? So the ego knows exactly what story to tell each and every one of us to get us to listen to it. And so because the stories were so real to me, you know, I couldn't just do nothing. I did do nothing, but I'll explain how in a moment. I couldn't just do nothing because the pull to believe the emotions and to believe the stories was too strong. So I had to do what I call active resting from mind. And I used self-talk in order to do this. I would talk to myself, remind myself that I want healing more than I want to manipulate the world. Remind myself that I want healing more than I want others to see me in a positive light, et cetera, et cetera. And yesterday, and that allowed me to do nothing, by the way. That allowed me, the self-talk allowed me to practice rest, accept, and trust. So I call it an active resting. So yesterday somebody asked me, you know, what were some of the things you used to say to yourself? What was some of your self-talk that allowed you to do this? And so I sat down and closed my eyes and went into a contemplative state, and several of the sentences came back into my memory. And I just wrote them down as they came back into my memory. And I posted that in a group that I have in Facebook. It's a private group called Ask Regina. It's a mentor group where only I am allowed to answer the questions. If anybody's interested in that, you may join the group. But it is really for just me to answer the questions. It's not a discussion group or anything like that. So I posted it there, but so many people liked that particular response. I thought, you know, maybe this is really helpful to a lot of people. So yesterday afternoon I went, and I also posted that to the Awakening Together blog. That list of things I used to say to myself so that I could actively rest from the mind. And that came out this morning on the daily update, so some of you may have seen it. But if you didn't notice it, you can go to the Awakening Together website, go to the Inspiration menu, and you'll see the Awakening Together blog. And it's posted right there on that Awakening Together blog. So since that seemed to be a fit with your talk, Jay, I thought I would go ahead and let people know that that list of things I used to say to myself is now available. All right.
Yeah, it seems like it's a perfect time to bring that up. And thank you, Barb, for posting that link. I'm glad you did put that to the blog. That's definitely helpful. Yeah, the rest except trust. For me, when stuff like that comes up, it was just a simple image of the front door really being useful to me. Like if you want to walk into a house and you don't want to sneak in, I guess it's the concept of spiritual courage, right? It's the type of courage that is a willingness to experience that and to hold the hand of spirit. I call that the front door. For me, that was a symbol that was really helpful. Not trying to get around to the side door or the back door or sneak around anywhere. Just through the front door, directly into the place, through the falsehoods that I've created, through the lies I've believed, that the judgments that have turned into the victims, which produce the hate and the anger and all that, you know, it was helpful for me to realize at some of the most intense times of that for me in my path, that I'm ready for this, that there's nothing that I've created that I also can't let go of and face. If my false mind has created these hatreds and angers, then it's also possible that I can face through them and let them go with the help of Spirit. And that I'm ready for what is in front of me. Okay, turning the mic over to you, Dances.
Thank you all very much, Regina, Jay, everyone who shared already, and including the stuff on the board. This is so funny how this works. When you coughed, it reminded me, we were in a study group, ACM study group that I was in, that any time that we were going, any of us were going through any particular rough patch, and we could share that and kind of bring it up, we would just say, bless you. And we discussed about how when anyone appears to be sick or going through some really crappy stuff, to just say, bless you. And it automatically seems to just dissolve, at least for me anyway, it really diffuses the belief, or at least dilutes it, the belief in the illness or, you know, the miscreation. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say about that.
Oh, thank you, Nances. Yeah, the blessings and the support of our Sangha, as the Buddhists call it, this room is our Sangha, our beloved friends, our support, our loving companions that are helping us through this process. I wouldn't say helping, but maybe attending to us. Because we don't need help. Spirit is the one that provides us help. We're not weak. Our true nature is infinitely strong in love. The invulnerability of love. But you know, when we are mistreated, when we are not given the respect or kindness, or we're abused in some way, or something happens that violates our sense of sovereignty of ourself, you know, it triggers a great deal of anger in us, right? And we can look at these things as spiritual lessons. We can look at these things as the means of our salvation. The very reason, the stimulus for our inward looking. Many times it's great pain that brings us to the greatest spiritual revelations. You know, and there's a lot of spiritual teachings that then teach about how sometimes this pain can be the teacher, right? And we need to be grateful for the gift that this gave us. Ultimately, when our forgiveness process is complete, we know that the presence of gratitude and thankfulness is there. Right? We know that it's done. We know that we've seen the full, complete process. And reunited with our joy through that journey. Because to let go of something that we feel violated our sovereignty of ourself is nothing less than to let go of the false self. Because the deeper the hurt goes, the greater the opportunity exists for a lot more release of the false self. Because the thing that it has infected the false self and filled this personality with whatever it has filled it with, all needs to be let go of to reconnect with joy. You know, so as we allow ourselves to be rewired in spirit and new wires be plugged into the holes from different wires, reconnecting as Dove is writing, cognitive restructuring, as spirit restructuring, rewired. As we allow this rewiring to occur, we allow the mystery of the heart to write upon our minds a new reality that we can live in, a new way of being that is written upon us for our lives from spirit. Right? It's a beautiful image. It's a beautiful image. You know, and there's a wonderful meditation at the end of Subtle Mystery. This is on page 81. If you don't have the book, I'd advise getting it. The Sufi Book of Life. Very healing book. Absolutely wonderful. I don't consistently attend Regina's Sufi group. I'm an inconsistent attender in the group, but the times that I have attended, I really enjoyed contemplating and participating in her group, because it's an absolutely wonderful snippets of, they call them pathways, but they're just great little encapsulated thoughts that have little jewels of truth in them, and it's just really wonderful. And at the bottom of page 81, there's a wonderful little meditation you can practice. Lynn, you could have been an attender. And just to give the Sufi contemplation another plug, that is on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. There is a handout online, and I would advise contemplating the items in the handout so that when you do come to the group, you can share the result of your contemplation. Would anyone else like to share something regarding a way they feel maybe they're currently challenged with something that they're hiding or needing to go within regarding, or just their own thoughts about contemplating mystery or a resistance that they had with mystery and going in? Please raise your hand and take the mic. Oh, Lynn, okay, go ahead.
Oh, great. Thank you, Jay. And sorry for the little glitch in Pal Talk. And it just cut out part of Regina's story, but hopefully it's not going to be a big deal on the recording. I'll tell you later what I did. But, yes, okay, how do I hide, or how do I resist? Is by blaming myself for the main thing. Feel guilty, blame myself. Think I've done something wrong, blame myself. And so it's the looking at the guilt. You know, how am I blaming myself? How am I making myself wrong, bad, or guilty for whatever this thought or whatever this action or whatever this opinion or an idea? If I'm not looking at every single thought that I have, every single opinion, everything that I'm doing, and looking at it and seeing that it's perfect, then I am looking at it and seeing that somehow or the other I'm bad, wrong, or guilty for having that thought. And so for me, right away, I just look at where is the guilt. And, you know, it doesn't seem likely. A lot of folks don't agree and think that, you know, I'm not guilty. I haven't done anything wrong for years. I haven't had a thought of being guilty for years. Well, you probably are not looking very closely at your thinking because there's not really anything that goes on in this world that is not the result of guilt. They're the result of a thought of guilt, projection of guilt, the decision to feel guilty, think guilty thoughts, make someone else guilty, become the victim of the world, become the victim of the sound of the air conditioner, the being upset because, you know, your granddaughter's sick and crying in the other room and, you know, you have to get up and, you know, go help her. And that draws you away from the other things that you think are important. And so you get this split in your heart about, oh my gosh, I should be doing this, but I've got to be doing that. And all of that, even a sigh is guilt. Every single bit of it where I think that I am not fulfilling my purpose. I'm not living up to my potential. I'm not doing what is expected of me. I am not perfect. I'm not, you know, the food I cook is not, you know, consumed by everyone with great joy. You know, some people are saying not enough salt or too much sugar. Every single bit of it is a pointer at me that I've done something wrong and that I haven't lived up to expectations. And so, you know, I have to look at my own thinking. What is my expectation of myself? What do I believe I'm doing? What do I think I'm here for? How do I think that my interactions or my influence on people in the world is causing the chaos and the havoc that I see when I look outside? These are all questions that if you are not asking them, and I'm speaking to every single person who is here, who lives in a world and has commerce with the world. If you're not asking these questions, then you are hiding from yourself. You are holding guilt and accusations that are not being addressed because you're not looking at them. So, you know, I can't emphasize it enough that really it is that being brave. Just being brave and just looking without judging yourself and looking at your own thinking without making yourself guilty or expecting you to be doing something different than what you're doing. All of that, you know, if you can do that and do that with an open and whole heart and not hide anything from yourself, even the slightest motives, the tiniest upsets, not hide any of it from yourself, you become free of all of it. And that is the real key and the only path to freedom as far as I can see. You know, if anybody can get there without doing that, let me know, because I'd love to see it. but I don't think it's going to happen. I think, honestly, unless you look at every corner, every thought and everything that you believe about yourself and the world, and the motives and the ideas and all that, you're going to be still blaming yourself for something that you have no responsibility for whatsoever. It's none of my business. The only business I have is the business of fixing something that I can do something about. And none of those things are anything I have any control over whatsoever. So there's no point in me feeling guilty for any of it, because I have done nothing wrong and can do nothing wrong. Anyway, that's my take on that. Thank you so much, Jay.
What a beautiful sharing, Lynn. Thank you. That's an awesome, concise, wonderful, perfect way of describing everything I was talking about today. Absolutely beautiful. Nothing can be kept hidden. All of it must be coming to the light. And you're right. That's the main point. There is no other way you can do that without facing it. Because that is hiding, as you say. As is truth. And I don't think anyone will be getting back to you on that, Lynn, because I don't think there is any other way to do it without facing, without being brought up. All the little, I guess used in a different way, I like the Kabbalist's analogy of the shattered glass it's more, their teaching regarding the shattered glass is more like each shard is like you could think of as a person. But I can take the analogy of all these scattered thoughts and judgments and those little shards of glass that you're picking up off the floor. And sometimes when you break glass, you know, there's little shards of the glass that fly off into the corner behind the desk, and they're stuck between the wall and the desk in this spot that's way back in there. And well, the truth is, for us to be awakened, that little chunk of glass that got stuck behind the desk, you actually have to go back there with a flashlight and one of those little picky tools and pick out that piece of glass. See? And what I've found is interesting is the more I open to myself, the more I'm willing, stuff comes up. I mean, just yesterday, stuff came up from when I was in high school. From when I was in high school that I had totally forgotten about. And I felt a feeling of embarrassment come up in my body because there was still unprocessed stuff with that one little situation. I hadn't thought about that situation in decades. But it's true that the more you keep bringing to the light and the more you purify, almost on its own, boiled up from the bottom, the fat will come to the top of the soup to be skimmed off. It's like just the willingness will bring up all those little hidden corners and those hidden dark spots of embarrassment or things that you forgot about that you shoved down or whatever it is. And the cool thing is that I don't need to fix it. Right? There's nothing to fix. The process is bringing it to the light and being with the embarrassment that you're feeling regarding the situation or the shame or whatever. Let it just come up and be there and let it, and do not judge it. And then within, I don't know, for me usually it's about 20 seconds, 35 seconds, sometimes a minute of non-judgment, of allowing, it literally disintegrates. It just fades and goes away. And when I practice that, it's like taking a little shard of glass up off the floor and throwing it in the trash can. Or, like in The Matrix, the cracked mirror becomes whole again, or whatever analogy works. And that's the cool thing, is that through that unfettered willingness, courage to face anything and everything in self, that this purification process will just happen. And as I've done that more and more and more, there's a greater and greater undisturbable sense of peace that has come up within me, and also a greater feeling of love and affection for just random people. I don't even think of as strangers anymore. There's just a baseline of affection for people that's greater than I ever had. And it's really neat to see in me that coming up, because that's something that's very welcome in my own consciousness that I really enjoy. And I think it's something we all want, really. And it's, you know, Lynn's writing about how we do feel these things in the body. Yeah, there's places in the body I will feel the emotion come up. And that's okay. I think that's just all part of it. You know, the body is the communication mechanism. So as I let it go, it's gone. Right? Hey Regis, how are you, brother? I haven't talked to you in a while. And then Lynn's just describing other people have different physical effects that come up sometimes. But when it comes up and it starts to come up, there's going to be, if your mind is not trained, you're going to want to just either shove it back down, right? Or judge it as you, oh, I was such an idiot back then, I can't believe I did that, right? That's the judgment thought. Then it doesn't actually go anywhere. It's not released. It just recycles back down. Ah, shit, I can't believe that was such a ridiculous thing I did. Oh, that was so stupid. See, that's a judgment about it. You can't do that. The whole point is you don't do that. When those memory thoughts resurface from the past, you simply do nothing. You helplessly sit there with it, but not helplessly, right? Your mind will think that you should do something about this, right? Judge yourself, chastise yourself, or maybe you had a victory and you're gloating over the victory you had. That's a judgment too. You know, you just be with it helplessly. Helplessly. Don't try to do a damn thing. And then that's in that state is where I find it actually gets released with the help of spirit. Only there am I truly clear from it. Not if I do any kind of judgment or any kind of jackrabbit mental reaction in any direction. I can't do that to truly release it. It just recycles back down. So again, it takes discipline to practice that. And you have to be ready for it, because when you practice your meditations, like come to the Sufi group, do the contemplations, do the daily quote, practice anything, get your mind the best you can into a greater disciplined state, right? So that when this stuff comes up for purification, you have a little bit of discipline, right? That you can work with, that will then allow you to be with what's there. It's what can be purified. And as Nancy is writing here on the board, is like Jesus asking the woman caught in adultery, who is left to accuse you? What is still comes up in my mind that accuses me? What is still comes up in my mind that accuses me? And even if you do find an accusation coming up in the mind, when you have the thought bubbling up to the surface like the fat coming up to the top of a soup to be skimmed off, broken shards of glass picked up, whatever the analogy is, it's a beautiful thought. Hey, Nancy, would you like to share about that? Giving up the mic.
Thanks, Jay. It's actually a little bit late now, and I'm actually 5 minutes late to call in for my own teaching this morning, or for my own meeting, I should say. But yeah, that did just come up, that I relate to the woman caught in adultery, and I like the story, and when people leave, and I see that this morning, as those thoughts leaving, those thoughts gathering around, you know, and Jesus saying, you know, like, who's left to accuse you? What thoughts are left in your mind that accuses you? And what a beautiful teaching this morning on looking, just looking at these thoughts. So, so beautiful. Thank you, Lon. I'm letting go of the mic.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you all for being here for the service. This concludes our sharing portion and the service for the gathering for today on March 13th. I love all of you. Thank you for joining. Signing off. Bye-bye, everybody.
I sat at home and watched a movie during the ocean scene. I stop the DVD. I turned off the power. There was no water on screen. Now that's so simple. Anyone can see. Images projected on screen are not reality. Peace does not need to be found. Peace is not far. It doesn't need to be created. Peace is what we are. I restarted my movie. Saw those flames rise high. The screen did not burn. I think you know why. This movie called Life, starring me. We get so busy playing our part, we can't forget what's true. Peace does not need to be found. Peace is not far. It doesn't need to be created. Peace is what we are. All experience, every thought called me.
Peace is what we are. thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sweetest sound. loving you. Sitting